Okay. Hi, everyone. Thank you for coming, and thank you for surviving DragonCon thus far. Have you been, from how tired you look, I'm guessing everyone's been having fun. Yes. Okay. The Global Game Jam is an event that takes place once a year with teams all over the country. How many people here have been to a game jam? Anyone? Okay, so this is a new concept for everybody. Oh. Thank you, Scott. All right, real quick about me. My name's Ilanka Dunnan. I'm a professional game developer, and I'm also, as of this year, on the board of directors for the Global Game Jam, so I'm helping to organize it. It's a wonderful event. Teams get together all around the world, all on the same weekend, to create games. And I'll give you a little bit on the history of it. The next one in January 2012 will be our fourth year. I'll be talking about what a game jam is, and also, if you want to get involved, how to do so. So it was started in 2008. It kind of outgrew from the International Game Developer Association, the education SIG, the special interest group. And one of the members of the SIG, Susan Gold from the IGDA, had been to something called the Nordic Game Jam. And what they were doing in Scandinavia is they were just getting together and making games really quick. And sometimes they would have competitions, like they'd get on a plane traveling somewhere, and then they'd say, can we finish a game before the plane lands? So they would just be coding really, really fast on their laptop tables. And it's a wonderful way to do very rapid prototyping of something, and it's great for education. So she picked it up and organized one. The first one was in January 2009, and it just took off immediately. It was in dozens of countries. It was an idea that really resonated with people. So there are sites that register at different universities. So the first year we had 53 different sites in 23 different countries. There were 1,600 participants, and 370 games were made in one weekend. At the January of this year, 2011 event, now we're up to 200 sites already, and we have sites in 44 different countries. 6,500 participants, and in one weekend we made over 1,500 games. So the growth is phenomenal, and we're very interested to see what it's going to be like for January 2012. There's so much excitement that's generated at these things. And some countries are using game jams as a way not just of teaching about game development skill, but just to kind of raise the mood in an area. So even if it's not the global game jam, they'll have a game jam, for example, in Japan, in Fukushima, to help kind of raise the mood of everyone that had been affected by the earthquake and the tsunami there. They held a game jam, and it just made so much energy and so much enthusiasm, and everyone was so proud of the games that they created. And it was a really heartwarming kind of event. So what happens at a jam is people will start gathering on Friday, usually on a Friday afternoon. The whole thing generally takes place in about 48 hours, from Friday evening until Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening. So at first, just people come in, it's strangers, and just greet each other. And then around sometime around 7 or so, there'll generally be a keynote. This is put out by the Global Game Jam Committee, and I'll show you one of these. It's a 7-minute keynote that was done by Gabler, who created a game called World of Goo, if any of you have played that game. Wonderful game. And that game, it didn't start from the game jam, but it started from a rapid prototype. They made a prototype over the course of about 4 days, and then they just kept iterating it, and eventually grew into this game that became very popular. Another example of a success story, not from the jam, but just from this idea of a prototype, is if you've heard of the game Portal. Portal started as a student project, and then it started getting attention, and then they got incorporated into a larger company, and they had more funding. They were able to do the full game Portal, and then Portal 2 that just came out. But it all started from something very small. And there are games that have come out of the game jam that have gone on to commercial success. People keep iterating them and go out and actually market them. So also, another thing about the Global Game Jam is there's a theme that ties together all of the different sites. So I'm the 2009 theme, I'm not certain, but I think it was something like, as long as we're together, something will go wrong. And so that theme, people then needed to make games based on that theme. And then for the 2010 Game Jam, people got together and said, okay, everybody, design a game based on deception. And then you'd have to think about what kind of a game you could do based on that. For the 2011, it was make a game based on extinction. And then imagine if we were breaking apart into brainstorming room, like what kind of a game can we make based on extinction? And people would just throw out ideas, you know, dodos and dinosaurs. And there were some interesting ideas that came up, like maybe the game will go extinct. So a couple teams made games that as you played it, if you didn't do well, the graphics started deteriorating, the sound started deteriorating. And some other places will do these, like I said, mid-year game jams. In St. Louis, we did a summer game jam, and we used the theme of Twice Upon a Time. And so the teams got together, and they brainstormed things about fairy tales or about playing a game once as one character, then again as another character. There was one cute game that came out where there was someone racing through heaven, and they were trying to escape the clouds of purgatory. And so they're racing through heaven. At the same time, someone was upside down, mirrored with them, racing through hell. And as each one jumped in heaven, they'd jump in hell, and they're chasing purgatory. So this duality was something that came from just this idea, Twice Upon a Time. And there was one on based on Red Riding Hood, where you play once as Red Riding Hood, and then you play it another time as you play it as the wolf. And just very fun ideas. So the brainstorming goes on, and then from brainstorming at any one site, there might be 50, 60, 75 ideas that are all kind of generated. And each brainstorming group, because a group you can really go no more than maybe 8 to 10 people in a group, and then they'd pick a few ideas, and they'd have someone who would be the evangelist for that idea, and then everyone would come back together, and we'd hear all the ideas from the different brainstorming groups. And then maybe we might write on a whiteboard or put a post-it on the wall, and one of the evangelists would stand near that, and then we'd all just kind of say, I want to work on that one, I want to work on that one. And as a group would gather, they'd say, okay, we have 6 people interested in creating this game. Is anyone a programmer? You kind of have to hope, you know, okay, is anyone here an artist? Is anyone here a designer? And if, say, the group gets together, there's no programmer, then you kind of have to split up and go or haggle with someone like, okay, we have 2 sound guys. We'll give you one of our sound guys if you give us one of your coders. And I love this process, speaking as a professional game developer, because it's so fast. You don't have time to check resumes and do focus groups and get management approval and check budget and all these things. You're just making a goddamn game. And it feels so good to just get something done in one weekend. So once you have the groups, then just things kind of go. You decide, okay, all right, so we have a coder. What do you program in? Okay, you're a C# coder. Okay, so this is going to be an XNA game. Or, oh, you're Flash. The only thing you can do is ActionScript. Okay, this is going to be a Flash platform. And so you kind of go through that, and the scope of what you want to create in the game. Is this going to be, okay, we're going to work on one level, and then if we have time, we'll make more levels? Or are we just going to make like a big world kind of thing? Or what? And then you just start, and you go. And the coders are programming, and the artists are sketching. The designers are creating levels. Maybe you've got a writer who's writing dialogue, and then they'll have to figure out someplace, okay, does anybody have a microphone? And you, okay, where can you go that's quiet? Someone might go out to their car just to have a quiet spot so that they can record some kind of sound effects. There's also websites you can go to where you can get free sounds. And I should mention, everything in the game jam is open source. So, and it's one of the requirements for when you create a game, Global Game Jam, that you upload not only the executable, but you also upload all of the source code. So you can look at what other people have done, and you're free to use that. And there's wonderful resources on the internet, freesounds.org or freesound.org, I'm not sure. And there's places where you can get Creative Commons music, and you learn as part of the game jam where you can get all these resources. And that's part of the educational aspect. And you're exposed to so many different tools that you might not be exposed to otherwise. Again, speaking as a professional game developer, you might be working in a very large company, but you are a level designer. And that's what you do, is you design levels. But you don't really know what tools are being made for being used for the art. You don't know what tools are being used for the sound. When you're at a game jam, you're in the middle of all of it. And it's all like right there. It's someone at the chair next to you. And so that kind of increases your own skill level as well. So Saturday, this process continues. Generally, the first basic prototype is going to be ready by Saturday afternoon. So less than 24 hours, you're going to have something. If you don't have a prototype by Saturday afternoon, you're probably in trouble, because you need to have time to test it and make sure it's doing what it is you want it to do. And a common problem in game design is feature creep. People say, oh, well, we don't need a prototype because we want to, you know, make everything purple, or wouldn't it be really cool if a dragon was hiding behind that door? And say, oh, we can do it, but you don't have time. You just have to get it out really, really fast. And so by Sunday, you're testing a little more coding, you're fixing bugs, you're making sure that you have a splash screen, you're making sure that you have a credits page, you're doing all these things to try and end up with some sort of a basic finished prototype, and because you're going to be demoing the game in the afternoon. Everyone's going to be coming back together on Sunday and saying, here's what we did over the last 48 hours. And usually, I'm always blown away by the creativity. Sometimes there are constraints that someone might do. They might say, okay, we're going to make a game, and we're going to make a game that can be played but without using your hands. Play a game without using your hands. And they might come up with something for a microphone, where if you're talking, one guy made something where there was a plant that would grow, but only would grow if there was sound in the room. And if there wasn't any sound, then the plant would kind of shrink a little bit. And if there was lots of sound, like everybody in the room was applauding, and the plant would go up and it would touch a cloud and maybe the rain would start or something like that. And it was a game. It was something that had kind of rules and structure to it. I'll also be showing you a demo of a video of a game that came out of Madrid, where they made a game that could be played with cell phones and a jumbotron that was at the plaza of this university. So, again, this slide is just showing that once a game is complete, they submit it to the globalgamejam.org website, and everyone demos their games, and everyone goes home and sleeps for a while. All right, so if you want to participate, and people say, what skills do I need to have? You don't need to have any skills, really. It's nice having coders. There need to be some coders in a game jam for something to happen. There need to be someone with art skill, maybe. At one game jam, there was a team got together of three coders, and as it happened, all they could do was code. They didn't have a lot of art, so they would just have little triangles going around, and then someone from one of the other teams went and drew stuff for them. It was interesting that two of the coders just happened to be working in the biomedical field. One of them was a coder from the Human Genome Project that just showed up at the game jam to kind of help out. So there's lots of things that need doing, even if you're not a coder. Say we need sound effects. We need a person who isn't coding, who has the time to go to freesounds.org and go find something that sounds like an explosion or something squishing or a door opening. There's usually need for someone to kind of coordinate all of it and be the hub that say, okay, the coders are going to need art, and then they go over to the art. So you need a producer, some sort of project manager, people to sketch things. Maybe you need more levels. And if nothing else, someone to play the game. Test it. See, is it working the way that we're intending for it to work? Make ideas. This is too easy. This is too hard. We need to add a timer. Some teams, by the time they get to Saturday evening, their prototype just isn't right. And I have seen teams say, okay, we're scrapping everything Saturday evening. Sunday morning, we're starting over. We're just reusing stuff. And they still manage to deliver a prototype by Sunday afternoon. So the skills that anyone can get by coming to these, you learn how to make a prototype really, really rapidly. And you learn about the different tool sets. You learn about teamwork. You're not going to do the game on your own. You need to work with other people. You need to trust the other people on your team. And it's great for networking within the game industry. Not networking as in hardware, but networking as in people. All the people that are at the game jam are in your city, and they all have an interest in games, and they're all coming together at one place, and you're seeing what they do and how fast they can do it, and can they do what they say that they can do. And we've seen people get jobs from game jams. I'm in charge of the intern program at Simutronics in St. Louis, and I've been at game jams, and I've seen, oh my God, that person coded all this in 24 hours. I go, hey, do you want an intern job at a game company? So, also, even if you're not getting an immediate job, you have, by working on a game, something that shows up on your resume. It becomes a part of your body of work. No one can ever take that away from you. You were part of the creation of a game, and that's a very cool thing that will stay with you. So if you want to be involved, there are ways to prepare. The number one way I say if you don't know how to code and you just want to learn something, there are free tools. For example, there's one called Game Maker. You can download it. It's by a company called Yo-Yo Games. I think they're out of Holland. Someone correct me if I'm not getting that right. And it's a point-and-click interface for making games. And it's a tutorial, and there's some basic art resources. And within an hour of using GameMaker, you can have something with, like, strawberries bouncing around a screen, and you're shooting them, and they explode into bananas, or just something silly. But it shows the process of making a framework, putting a score object somewhere, having a beginning of a game, being able to shoot in a certain direction if you want to have a shooter game, if that's what you want to do, and it's basic tools. If you have a Mac, there's a free app called Game Salad that you can get. If you're a coder, C# is a wonderful interface. XNA, XNA 3.1, XNA 4. Unity is something that's really popular right now, because once you code something in Unity, you can show it on Windows, you can show it on Mac, you can show it on the web, and that being able to show it on all the platforms is really nice. One game I worked on at a game jam, it was kind of a bummer because we coded in C# XNA, and it looks really cool on a Windows box. And then someone comes in and says, I have a Mac, how can I see it? There's no way to really demo it to them, aside from maybe giving them a video of some sort. Flash is another very good kind of general web. If you code something in Flash, pretty much anyone can probably see it. And there's many, many other tools. If a coder comes in and says, I wrote my own programming language and I want to code in that, and they've got a team around them, go for it. There's no constraints on what you have to use. Just use whatever you're comfortable with. So to organize a site, chances are, if you want to be involved in a game jam and you're already in a large city in the United States, chances are pretty good that there's already going to be a game jam organized there. So you just go to globalgamejam.org and you search on your state or your city and you see if there's a site, and then you can sign up for it. Signups will generally start in November. If there's not a site, create one. The requirements are it has to be something that's open for 48 hours. It doesn't necessarily have to be open right around 24 hours a day. Some sites are. Some sites will have a couple rooms set up, so there's a game development room and then there's a sleep room. So if you want time to just take a break, you go sleep, and then there's a socializing room as well. Others might be open from, say, 10 a.m. to 10 p.m., then they kick everybody out, and then they open again 10 a.m. the next morning. So it's really whatever is comfortable for you. It has to have Wi-Fi access, because to do something this quickly, you really need access to the Internet. And site organizers would then go to the Game Jam site when it's open for site registration, which will be in the first week of October, and you'd register your site, and then we bring all the hundreds of site organizers into a project management site called Basecamp, basecamphq.org, and it's there that there's discussions, and we share information with the site organizers, like what will be the video keynotes, what will be the theme, because the theme is always secret. It's not announced until the Friday of that particular Game Jam. And then once a site is established, then people can start, individual jammers can start signing up in mid-November. And you just go to the site and you say, I'll be there. And if you can be there Friday, Saturday, Sunday, that's great. If you can't be there on Friday and you're just going to wander in on Saturday, there's probably still stuff that you can do, finding sound effects, helping to test. But definitely just go to the website and you can get more information. So I'm going to show a couple games that have been created. One was created in Madrid, and it was called Fireflies. And what they did is there was this large Jumbotron screen. Let me see if I can get over there and hope that... And this is just a quick two-minute video here. All right. Is the Wi-Fi up? Do we know?
Yeah, it's caching.
Okay, so while it's caching, let me see what else we can do. Okay, there it goes. I tried to load this before, but I couldn't.
It stopped.
Let's see if we can get it. So I'll talk about it while hopefully it's caching a little bit more. So in this large Jumbotron, and all these, you know, these are the bad guys with the unhappy faces, and there would be a webcam that was pointing at the square. So sometimes as you're walking through the square, you could see yourself walking through the square. I don't know if you've ever been to Times Square or things like that. And what they did is they hacked into it somehow so that if you were standing in the square and you had your cell phone and it was on and you were waving it, that it could tell where the light was and where you were standing in the square, and you would be waving and it would kill whatever the bad guy was at that particular spot of the Jumbotron. And it was so intuitive that not only could you do it, but other people walking by who weren't part of the game jam would stand and they'd watch, and then they'd reach into their pocket and pull out their cell phone, and then they were going around as well and helping to go beat up the bad guys, which is just amazing kind of emergent gameplay going from it. So let's see. Pause it for a second. Yeah, I can't tell which of those are the actual jammers and which are people that were just kind of wandering in from the public. Sorry? So. Yeah. So I think that gives you kind of the general idea of what was going on. And then they prototyped this whole thing in a weekend and went out there and did it, which I thought was just amazing fun. Let's see. This is from the St. Louis Game Jam. These are some of the games, and this was from the Extinction. I'll show you my own game real quick, called Transference. We had one coder who kind of said that he knew how to code, and I think he kind of bit off more than he could chew, so we didn't have the full prototype done by Sunday. So it was a language that I didn't know at the time, C#. But I was so enthused about it that I went and I taught myself C# that night. And I went and I finished the game so that we had a prototype by Monday. And I'll show you what we came up with. Let's see. The theme was extinction, and so we had this thing where all knowledge had been lost, and there was this colony of orbs that's trying to survive, and one needs to go and like relearn about fire, so it would turn red, and then it would bring the knowledge of fire back to the colony of orbs, and then you would have the red kind of rippling through the colony, and then another would go and get knowledge of water, and you'd have to have knowledge of fire before you could go through dark. And it's really, really basic, not elaborate graphics, just kind of circles and a basic map here. But I'm amazed with everything we did. We had an artist working on the beautiful splash screen here, and then we did the credits. And I'll show you real quick here. And we had someone doing music for it as well, though the music doesn't seem to be playing. This just learning how to do this sort of flocking behavior was very interesting. There's the music. So there's, you can see they're learning red here. And then the red ones are able to go through this dark area. So if they learn and they come back and they get water, but then going through this dark area, everyone that doesn't have the knowledge of fire kind of dies. And if I were to work more on it, I'd probably do more with the physics engine, because if something is on this slope, I'd like to see things rolling down the slope. But there was a limit to how much could be done in a weekend. So I have a couple that are going to get water, and then as they learn about water, they get darker, like they really understand water. And then once someone really knows fire, really knows water, and then they share and they turn purple. They have risen to another state of knowledge. So they have the knowledge of both fire and water, and they're able to go through the dark areas. And in here is kind of a cooling where they could just kind of relax and sort of forget some of what they know. But then when they come out, they can go and chat with the others and then regain that knowledge. has to have some sort of a win condition, so they're trying to get out of here is what they're trying. You have to be careful not to touch these, because then they'll go back to just knowing fire or just knowing water. And then here's the temple that they're trying to get to. And you win! Congratulations! And it just came from make a game based on extinction. That's where it came from. So, and let's go back to here. So, summary, and then kind of we'll go to Q&A. The game jam, only 3 years so far, but it's growing like mad. I strongly encourage everyone to get involved. It's so much fun. And it's a great way to build the community and to build networks and to learn who else in your area is interested in games and just to increase your own skill set. And it's fun. So, any questions? Yeah.
Do you know of any resources or tutorials that
Okay, so the question was, do I have any ideas on where you can get a tutorial?
Or books.
Or books.
About rapid prototyping,
specifically. Books, I don't know. There are people who have blogged about their experiences at different game jams, so you could definitely go there. The Education SIG has done some stuff. I would also just go to Google and, you know, rapid game prototyping. Good information sites for games in general, Gamma Sutra. GammaSutra.com has a lot of info, and there are many, many games written about games. And also there have been some talks at the Game Developer Conference where you have some very experienced game developers who are talking about games that they wanted to do, and then once they made a prototype, they realized that the idea sucked. And so then they just scrapped it entirely and then went on to something that became huge, but it's fascinating to hear them talk about, you know, what didn't work. And I generally learn so much, and it's so useful in any kind of a creative process to talk not just about the successes, but to talk about the failures as well. That's a wonderful learning experience. So, anybody else have ideas on rapid prototyping books or anything like that? Jesse Schell, J-E-S-S-E-S-C-H-E-L-L, brilliant guy. Oh, my God. And he's also got a great website that is useful for educators on how to teach game design, and just wonderful resource. So, yeah, thanks for bringing that. Are you in the game industry? What do you do? Okay. Zynga is hiring everyone right now. Zynga is absorbing the world. Absolutely. So many people I know in the game industry, guys from the old Infocom days are now at Zynga, and people from the MMO days are at Zynga. And yeah, Zynga's just hiring like mad. It's kind of poetic. Mike Perry, who worked at Maxis and worked on a game called Sim Farm, if anyone remembers that, and he's now one of the guys at Zynga in charge of Farmville. I thought that was interesting. Any other questions? Yep.
I know you've got one in St. Louis. Is there one in Atlanta?
Well, let's check. Let's see.
It's usually around Southern Poly. Yes. Southern Poly, but people from Georgia Tech go SCAD involved.
Okay, these are countries in Europe that have game jams so far. Let's go to... Oh, we should go by U.S. state here.
Yeah, if you go to Google, type Atlanta game jam. Mm-hmm.
Georgia, yeah, Atlanta, Georgia, SPSU, and Savannah. Oh, sure. Can do. Yeah, this is just, oh my God, they had a huge game jam, didn't they?
One of the problems is that YMAX is the biggest game jam in the United States, and they have like
see. Texas, yes. One in Austin at D7. The last one was at D7 Studios. It might be somewhere different. And Plano, Texas, wherever that happens to be. Any other cities anyone wants me to check here? Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The summer game jam in St. Louis we held at my company's offices, Simutronics, and it was a little chaotic, but it was fun and it was inspiring for the people at our office as well as for all the game jammers. It was kind of tricky because we were crunching on a game at the same time that the game jam was going on. So it was a nice break, I think, for some of the crunchers to work on something that they could just finish rather than this crunch that's just going on and on and on. But Tiny Heroes will be out on the iPhone soon. So
that's actually a good lead into what I wanted to ask. It's kind of some IP questions. And this has to do with how the game industry is structured. When you start working, there's always the IP questions and restrictions. A lot of places can be really draconian of, you know, if you work here and you make something, then we're going to own it.
Right.
Some places...
Do we have a microphone for him, by the way?
Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry, it's been a long con.
Okay, some of the game companies are very draconian about IP. You know, if you make something, then we own it. And they always give you a sheet, though, that lets you list out IP you've created before, and as long as you're not working on their time, on their machines, it's kind of assumed that you can work on those ideas. So with a game jam, at the end of it, who owns the IP, and also have you run into anything, since you work at a game company, any issues with running a game jam or... being in one?
Everything is open source. Everything is and it's on the Game Jam website. It's all Creative Commons stuff, so anyone can use it as long as there's attribution given. And each we have on the Game Jam site, any game that's created, it lists everyone that was involved with the creation. They don't own it, but there it is. And some of them do take it, and then they start adding more code on top of it and perhaps turn it into a commercial product. At our game company, we've never had... And I'm just speaking for Simutronics. We've never had any trouble with intellectual property. Quite the opposite. It's usually incredibly inspiring to everyone from QA testers up through the CEO. Our CEO is passionate about the game jam. We couldn't have hosted it, you know, without his strong support. And I just think anyone who gets involved with a game jam would be excited about it. But I could see that. Using company computers or company resources that some companies might feel differently. I haven't seen it personally, but it's possible.
Okay.
Any other questions? I was going to go to the homepage here of the Global Game Jam website. There aren't awards, but there are. We do feature certain games, and also we congratulate other people that are doing local game jams. So this is the one I was talking about, the Japanese earthquake and tsunami. We posted a news blurb about their game jam, and just every week we try to feature one of the games that came out of whatever the most recent global game jam was, whether it be from Ireland or from Finland. Let me see. Shanghai ran their own game jam. They did one. The end is nigh. So there was this thing about different people being taken up for the rapture, and then so yeah. The end of so the description was, the end of the world has finally come. We have all been judged. Righteous people shall be ascended into heaven, and the wicked shall remain to suffer. You are one of the devout, one of the righteous, or so you thought. So, in a bitter, jealous rage, you must prevent your neighbors from floating into heaven. Drag them back down to earth, or simply use your gun. If you can't have bliss, why should they? So this came out of the Shanghai Game Jam. Yeah. So there's just too much to show. There's just so many games. Some of them that just the graphics are stunning. You get someone who happens to have really good 3D experience or a good 3D engine, and the production values are incredible. I wish I could show more of them, but it would take time to get them all loaded on here and running. So any other questions?
Sure. Another one.
Sure. Microphone.
When it's, oh.
when you're running a worldwide one, mm-hmm. which it sounds like will happen in January, mm-hmm. how do you handle the time difference? Like the fact that Friday starts so much earlier in some parts of the world than others.
Yeah, we've talked about that, and we just go with the local time zone. So it does mean that it's possible that someone in Asia will know the theme before those that are in the United States, but we generally just accept it and go on. There might be some people who get a jump start of a few hours. We tell people, don't come to the game jam with a prepared game. Just come and go into the brainstorming. It's always possible that someone's going to cheat, but generally we haven't really had a big problem with that.
Okay. How do you feel about borrowing code from other game jams? Like you say, well, there's a really cool game. Well, there's this other game jam from last year. Why don't we just pull some of the code from it?
The question was about pulling code from other games. Go for it. You know, it's all Creative Commons. As long as you attribute it properly, it's all free to use. So we have thousands of games that are on the Global Game Jam site right now. Source code is all there. Just take it, use it, build on it. It's all good. Any other questions?
How many showed up at the St. Louis one?
At the global version of the St. Louis Game Jam, which was at Webster University, and we kind of took over all of their computer labs and a couple of rooms in their library as well. I would say there was about 50, 60 people there. And then when we did the summer game jam, we had something comparable to that, about 44 people. And it was just word of mouth. We weren't going out and heavily promoting it. We do have a St. Louis game developer community, and we would talk about it, and there are some mailing lists. And it's amazing. It just kind of goes out, and you just have people show up that, how did you hear about the game jam? Oh, I was talking to somebody on campus, and I heard about it, and then they come by. And then they have a great time. Any other questions? I'm trying to see if there was anything I missed in the slides here. If you have a question, you can write to me. And, of course, just go to the globalgamejam.org website. And, I highly recommend it.
I was just wondering if your PowerPoint presentation will be online anywhere.
I can do that. Yeah, if you email me, I can send you a copy of it. And there are other presentations that have been given by other members of the directors where they go over, say, a different angle of it. If they're presenting about the Global Game Jam to educators, they talk about other things that students can get from it. I can do that. Yeah, sure. All right. Anything else? Okay, so kind of a short, slightly short presentation, but it's the last day of Dragon. Thank you all for coming. I appreciate it. Good questions.